Nicole hosts Easter every year. That's why she shops at BJ's Wholesale Club, stocking up on spiral ham, baked goods, fresh flowers, candy, and 5 dozen eggs.
I've got a lot of baskets to fill.
Nicole's not worried because she knows she can save big and get it all done in one trip.
It's like winning the Easter egg hunt.
When you save, everyone wins. Get a $15 digital coupon when you spend $150 in one transaction, now through April 5th. Visit BJ's.com/Easter coupon for details. BJ's, your Easter destination.
Hi there, we are James and Dan, two forts of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Behind the Knife, the surgery podcast, where we take a behind-the-scenes intimate look at surgery from leaders in the field.
Okay, and welcome back to another Behind the Knife. Today we have an interesting collaborative with our European colleagues that we'd like to highlight on Behind the Knife to help people worldwide get involved. It's called Surge Week, or it's a global surgery collaborative on operating on patients with COVID and helping define the kind of timeline and the best options for doing that. We're going to learn a lot more of it today from two of our interviewees. We have Joanna Samoys. She's a research fellow in global surgery at the University of Birmingham, and she's a general surgery trainee from Portugal. And we're also lucky to have James Glaspie. He's a general surgery resident working in Birmingham in the UK, and he's the NIHR doctoral research fellow in global surgery. So welcome, Joanna and James. Thanks for coming on Behind the Knife.
Thanks, Kevin. Great to be here.
Can you just tell us, one of you guys, tell me about how this collaborative was created, what we've achieved by now, and what sets it apart from sort of other COVID studies?
Sure. So this collaborative is an amazing network of surgeons and anesthetists that was created partly during the COVID pandemic. So when COVID hit several countries, surgeons got together and joined efforts to deliver studies to focus on the impact of COVID in surgical outcomes. That was the driving force behind our first study. And then another research question also came to our minds as a surgical community, which was, what is happening to our cancer patients? Are we offering surgery in safe conditions? Are they being delayed? What's the impact of that? And that was the motivation for our second study about cancer surgery and cancer care during the COVID pandemic. So this was the way that this collaborative kind of developed in the recent months, but this study will take a step forward. So we will join the efforts of this collaborative that is quite new and has gathered off efforts from the five continents with another collaborative that has previously delivered global surgery studies in the past, Global Surgery 1, 2, and 3, that focus on outcomes of surgery all over the world, SSI and mortality after surgery. So it's very exciting to be able to join efforts and have a huge collaborative behind a new study that can contribute both to COVID and also global surgery outcomes.
So James, can you tell us a little bit more about this? What are the next steps and how does Surge Week study fit in?
Absolutely. As you say, this is a truly global effort and one that's grown over 8 years or so. And we always try and pick sort of a hot topic, which is real relevance to patients and a real chance of patient benefit. And one thing that we've seen grow quite rapidly during the pandemic, particularly over the last couple of months, is this idea of a safe window from a SARS-CoV-2 positive swab in an asymptomatic patient, or for that patient with the severe COVID-19 symptoms that we've all seen in hospitals around the world. And, you know, when is it safe to operate on those patients? In the COVID surge and COVID surge cancer study, which we think is one of the biggest prospective studies ever done now in surgery, it's hit 50,000 patients from over 1,050 hospitals in 88 countries. Within that study, there was around 200 patients that had a previous SARS-CoV-2 infection or COVID-19 that then went on to have surgery within our data collection window. And from that little snapshot, just 200 patients, it looked like the effects, the severe phenotype of SARS-CoV-2 in the perioperative setting, and it's linked to death and pneumonia and those severe postoperative complications that we worry about, seems to last for at least 4 to 6 weeks after a patient has recovered from COVID. And when we talk about heart attacks and another circumstance, then people tend to say, you know, you shouldn't operate on a patient within 6 weeks of an MI. You know, within 3 months is still a lasting effect, but after a year, that probably returns roughly to baseline. And we're trying to answer that now for COVID-19 and to find out when is a safe window for patients that have been screened and have a positive test or have had COVID, but need a surgery in a short time frame for a time-dependent condition, such as cancer or a quality of life surgery for a severe condition that is at risk of deteriorating. And so that's where SurgeWeek fits in. It'll answer this really important question about the safe window to surgery.
Great. Yeah, that is a tough question. As many of you know, we have some of these patients that are completely asymptomatic, and we don't know if that impacts their outcomes. And then you guys are really looking at each aspect of this, both the pre-op patients with COVID and post-op. Can you describe a little bit of sort of the cohorts you're looking at in this?
Yeah, so this study will collect data from patients, from all patients being operated in the hospitals that take part. So we will not only look at patients with a previous diagnosis or a current diagnosis, but also patients who had never have a COVID diagnosis before or currently. And to be able... doing that, we're going to be able to have a comparison between the different groups and kind of assess the outcomes and the risk of the different groups of patients, so we can actually inform practice in a more comprehensive way. By doing this and by collecting data from all the patients being operated in a hospital, we're going to be able to contribute as well for the global surgery indicators, which I think is probably one of the most exciting things about this study, because we're not only tackling a COVID problem, but also we are contributing at the same time to something that is globally irrelevant and more, you know, in the long term can contribute to WHO and global surgery outcomes and goals in the future. So I think that's very interesting as well. And you think, James?
Yeah, absolutely. I think COVID surge, I think many hospitals around the world felt that if they hadn't been very severely hit by COVID in their local community, then they felt perhaps that they weren't able to take part in the early phases. And that's particularly relevant to some areas of sub-Saharan Africa, where we work with a number of collaborators and leaders in global surgery who perhaps weren't hit so severely by COVID in the early phases of the pandemic, but do very much want to contribute to these global studies. So I think by tying together the Global Surge Collaborative, which is focused on hospitals all around the world, and COVID Surge, which has perhaps been a little bit more focused, not by design, but by necessity on Europe and North America and Southeast Asia, where the first emergence of COVID was most apparent. I think by merging these two networks together, then it means it really does have the potential for global impact. And the point you mentioned on the Lancet indicators, I think this is a perfect opportunity to collect global benchmarking data, both about case mix. So any collaborators that want to take part would contribute all of the consecutive eligible patients that are identified in the 1 week period that they choose for the study. And they will also enter on a survey at a center level, the total number of cases that were done in the week in that hospital. So for example, in my hospital in Queen Elizabeth in Birmingham, I may enter the colorectal data and I may enter 100 colorectal cases and then say that there was 1,000 cases done within the hospital. So we know that in a hospital of my of our size, in a country of our sort of health system, then roughly 10% of the case mix may be colorectal as an example. And this will allow us to do these quite complex modeling studies to look at differences in the way in which surgery is provided around the world and update some of the older estimates on the Lancet Commission on Global Surgery. So yeah, I think that's a really key secondary objective of this study.
Great. One question. I just want to take one step back. For someone like me, I'll plead ignorance here. Can you tell me, so there's the Global Surge Collaborative and then there's the COVID Surge Collaborative. Are those two separate things? And then Surge Week is going to somehow tie those together. Am I understanding that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Think that's a good way of looking at it. Actually, they pretty much overlap. You know, many people taking part in COVID Surge had contact with Global Surge studies before, but this is definitely a joint effort and a growing opportunity and a learning opportunity for everyone interested in global surgery and in research in surgery for sure. But that's a good way to look at it. And something pretty amazing is that I think we do learn from each other, and the hospital leads, the collaborators, everyone learns from each other because everyone is so enthusiastic about these global scale studies that it's impressive to see how it grows in terms of numbers and in terms of impact. Just maybe to mention now, we had our first paper from COVID Surge, fortunately published in The Lancet, with how our first 1,000 patients operated with a COVID diagnosis. And I think that's also a very good, it reflects the impact of this huge effort that people made to collect data and participate during a very hard time, during the time that COVID was hitting their hospitals. So I think we're all very grateful, and we're looking forward to grow this network and the impact of it.
Great. Let's dive in some to the nuts and bolts of this. Which hospitals can participate? What are the timelines? And can you describe the collaborative authorship policy?
Yeah, absolutely. And so basically, any hospital around the world that conducts surgery can take part. So it's a really wide, pragmatic study. So from a tiny hospital that may conduct just obstetric surgery up to a big quaternary hospital that may conduct every type of surgery, even the most, you know, advanced and complex and new techniques. So any hospital worldwide, in that week, we effectively have a mini team. So it may be a team of three people in one specialty over a 1 week period that collect data on operations that are performed within that specialty group. So again, going back to if I was doing a colorectal data, I would collect data on all of the elective and emergency patients undergoing surgery in a colorectal discipline during that week. We are very broad and inclusive with who can be involved. So the collaborators can pick any week during the month of October and that suits them. If centers want to enter data over several weeks in different teams, they're obviously very welcome to do so. And we live and die by this single corporate authorship, a collaborative research model. And what that means really is in none of the papers that we publish, we often publish in big high impact journals, there's never any human on the top line of the authorship. It's always just the group name. So in this case, it would be Global Surge Collaborative, COVID Surge Collaborative. And then in the appendix, we have a growing list of collaborators from all around the world with some idea of what their designated task was within the project. So for instance, there might be a writing group, a project steering group, statistical analysis, translation. This has already been translated into all of the WHO major languages, the hospital leads, the collaborators. And for an example, for COVID Surge Cancer, which is the project we're just finishing, there's going to be around 6,500 collaborating authors on that author list, which would put us above the Large Hadron Collider in terms of the number of co-authors on a paper. So probably these are big collaborating groups of frontline surgeons all around the world that are able to take part. Joe, did you want to add anything to that about the nuts and bolts of the study?
Yeah, sure. I think you've given a great overview. I would just like to emphasize that it does seem like a lot of work to collect data from all the patients being operated, but we do encourage people to involve not only surgeons but also trainees and medical students in their teams, so the workforce behind the study can be driven by a lot of people that sometimes are quite enthusiastic and quite young, so they also have the motivation to do it. So please do feel free to reach out to those people in your hospitals if you want to take part. And also, a hospital can collect data from some of the specialties or all the surgical specialties, and we are flexible to that as well, because we know that not all the departments will have the same capacity. So we are flexible to that, and we will allow the different hospitals to build up the different teams as they have the capacity to. But if they have very few capacity, they can contribute with a bit less, that's okay. We can manage all of that. We really want all the possible hospitals to participate, of course.
If people want to get involved, how do they approach this?
So there's loads of different ways of getting involved. We've got a growing social media presence on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and where people can link to the studies and have discussion about the topics and see how the networks are growing. There's different Twitter pages for different parts of the networks. So there's country-specific network Twitter pages and region-specific Twitter pages that have sprung up through leaders in different countries and environments. We also got our website, which is www.globalsurge.org/surgeweek. S-U-R-G week, where we've got study documentation. There's a YouTube video about the protocol if people want to digest that in the coffee room after a case, and things such as ethics forms, patient information sheets, everything you could possibly need to get the study set up in your hospital, with examples from all around the world. Otherwise, we'd be very happy for people to contact us personally if there's listeners to this podcast. Please do get in touch, and we'd be delighted to connect you to the network.
So how long are you going to follow up these patients? How long of a commitment is this? I know it's just 1 week of surgery that we're looking at, but how long are we looking at these outcomes in the long run?
So the follow-up period will be 30 days for all the patients. So actually the work behind it will involve collecting data from the patients being operating during the selected week and following up at 30 days. It will not involve any extra meetings with the patient, anything besides whatever is usually done on a clinical basis. So you would probably need to check the records at 30 days after surgery to be able to enter the data for the outcomes, but you would not need to schedule an extra clinic for the patient to come. So it's usually whatever you usually do will be sufficient, will be enough to participate in the study.
Do you guys have examples of IRB submission forms to help people get this through the IRB and get this approved in a timely fashion?
Yeah, so thanks, Gavin. There's various different systems around the world in terms of local approvals that would be required for a study such as this. So I think the most important thing to say is it represents a very minimal ethical risk. It only uses routinely collected electronic health data. It doesn't require any additional follow-up, and is not an there's no investigation within, say, it's an exploratory and it's a non-experimental study. And so for many countries in the world, it doesn't require a formal ethics submission in order to get approval. So for example, in the UK, and this would be classified as a clinical audit or service evaluation. However, for many countries, it is very different. So in Spain and Italy, Some countries will need individual patient level consent to include them in a study like this. And then there's everything in between, such as institutional review board approval, where you will need to go through ethics approvals, but it won't need patient level consent, and some sort of mixtures of processes in between. So fortunately, within our international dissemination committee, which Joe chairs, there is representation from 100 plus countries. And this is already, this study has already received signups from 1,750 centres, I think, as of today, from 128 countries. And we've already received approvals, be those ethics or otherwise, in many of those countries. We've asked collaborators to provide examples of those, and we've put as many as we can onto the website, and that'll be growing every day. So as much as we can, we're trying to help collaborators make this as smooth as possible and provide local examples to support their applications to ethics or institutional review boards.
So I know you guys are both fellows in global surgery, and this project is very much a global surgery project. Can you just talk about how the implications of the study are going to impact global surgery in the long run?
Absolutely. So we hope this will be a large benchmarking study for surgical practice worldwide. So it'll provide in-depth information about the sort of case mix that's happening in hospitals of different sizes around the world. We're tying in some information about the providers of surgery and anesthesia and obstetric practice. We've got some outcome data, and we've aligned that to the Lancet Commission on Global Surgery. And we're reaching out to as many countries around the world as possible, and then in depth into countries. So we've got a system where there's national leads in each country, and they tend to feed into a regional level steering group to encourage colleagues across different nations to get involved in the project. What we're hoping is that we reach not just the big hospitals and academic hospitals within countries, but also the smaller hospitals that provide essential surgical services in low middle income countries, as well as high income countries. So what we hope this will give is a real view into the world in which surgery is provided. And we mentioned a bit earlier about perhaps updating some of the modeling exercise with up-to-date prospective data from 2020, 2021 about these key indicators about surgical providers and outcomes. So this is really will be a treasure trove of data. We're very open to collaborations. Within the projects we've run so far, there's internationally a speciality representative writing groups and steering groups which take on different analyses, be they across the whole data set or within different countries. So this will hopefully be a treasure trove of data to have a global impact and improve the way that we can practice surgery into the future.
Yeah, maybe just to finish, I would like to add that we aim to provide also a connecting and learning platform for everyone that takes part. So I would say I've been a collaborator before and all these kind of roles. I do think that collaborative studies do provide a space for people to learn every day from each question about the protocol, from ethics, applications, IRBs, this and that. And they kind of can develop their motivation to do research in the future, maybe in a more active way if they participate in collaborative studies. So we're aiming to contribute to science and knowledge and surgical practice, but also to inspire people to participate in research and to be collaborative as a whole. I think that's also something to mention, maybe.
Fantastic. Definitely. So if I were to sum this up for some of my friends here, tell me if I'm getting this right. This is a collaborative involving global surge and COVID surge, looking to determine optimal time for surgery following or perioperative around a COVID infection. And it's going to be a week-long kind of biopsy of hospitals worldwide that you're going to follow out for 30 days to help really help define for surgeons worldwide when and how to operate on COVID patients.
I love the word biopsy, Kevin, and yeah, absolutely, that's spot on.
Great. And so this is really a chance. I encourage people out there, you know, some operative rooms or operating rooms are still slow and clinics are a little slower. This is a chance to help, you know, help the global community out in this tough time and contribute to some potentially game-changing research in how we treat these patients. So I encourage everyone to look into this, and I'm actually going to take a look at my own institution and see if we can get something like this going. So Joanna and James, thank you so much for coming on Behind the Knife. And we will provide the links and your guys' contact info in our show notes, and so people can get a hold of you guys.
Until next time, dominate the day.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words "Jesus saves" written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.